Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. If you have ever thought to yourself, I have the career and the success that I worked so hard for and that I really thought I wanted, but for some reason I'm still not happy, what is wrong with me? Then this episode might shed some light for you. My guest today is the author of the Amazon bestseller, The 6 Habits of Highly Effective Sales Engineers, and he is the founder of Demo Doctor, a sales training company dedicated to the growth and development of technical pre-sales engineers. He started his career as a computer programmer, made a mid-career decision to get into sales, and after 15 successful years in sales, he launched a training business, mere weeks before the COVID-19 pandemic struck in the U.S. In spite of it all, he has successfully navigated the twists and turns thus far and willfully shares a story of perseverance, determination, and an undying belief in himself. His name is Chris White, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bobby. It's just a delight to be here.
Well, I appreciate it because I know you're busy. I appreciate the time. And when we talked before, Chris, you had mentioned to me that your path has had a lot of twists and turns. And I thought that might be a good place to start. Would you fill us in a little bit?
I'd be happy to. And you're right. I mean, sometimes when I look back, it is amazing sort of some of the turns I've had. And there are times when I think, gosh, I feel like I should have been, you know, I should have shortcutted some of these. But in hindsight, I guess I realized that I think all the turns and the detours are part of the journey. So I graduated from college in the early 90s with an IT degree. And frankly, it was funny. I did IT. I decided to study IT because, frankly, that seemed like the only major that I would actually graduate with. Because I wasn't particularly strong in any other major. And most of my friends at the time were like, are you kidding me? You're going to do IT? That's like the hardest thing, you know?
Wow.
But about 15 years into my career, I had reached a very desirable point. I was a consultant. I was making very good money, and I was highly regarded in my profession. I was considered an expert, and yet I was really unhappy. And I found myself sort of jumping from job to job. I would land on a project and within a few months feel like I've sort of figured things out, and just would be eager to jump to something else. And honestly, Bobby, I thought there was something wrong with me. You know, like what's wrong with me? You know? Like I can't be happy.
Yeah. That's tough.
It is. It is. And I was married with kids, and in fact, I started reasonably young, with kids. And so I literally sought help. I found a career coach, a professional career counselor, if you will. And I went through a series of sort of tests. He runs a program where he kind of does a series of aptitude tests and skills tests. And what I learned is there's actually nothing wrong with me at all. I just discovered that I had certain talents and skills that needed an outlet. And as an IT professional, I really wasn't getting the opportunity to use those skills. And what I discovered was that was sales, and specifically technical sales, would be a good role for me. So I literally made a career change 15 years in and got into technical sales. And really found my passion. So that was when I talk about sort of the twists and turns, that was probably the first big, sort of turn or unexpected, twist for me, if you will. I'll pause there. Does that resonate?
Yeah. And I mean, that's a big, to go from IT into technical sales, that's a pretty big turn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. You're right. But for me, here's what I knew about myself. I knew that I loved speaking to audiences. I knew I loved engaging with people. And what this career coach helped me understand about myself too is that I'm great at sort of starting projects and initiating projects. And I have a high rate of idea flow. What I'm not good at is sticking with like a project or a challenge for a long period of time, right? He said, like scientists, for example, that spend their entire career researching for like a cure or studying, cancer, right? Yeah. Those are the type of people that they have a very slower kind of quote rate of idea flow, and they can concentrate and focus on something not only for years, but for an entire career. Well, that wasn't me.
That's right.
So this idea of working with lots of different clients, sort of in the early stages of a project or an initiative, I knew, and the ability to sort of get on stage and present to people, I knew that it just felt like that was the right thing for me. And in fact, when I got into the role, it was, I loved it. But here was the interesting thing, Bobby. I thought I was going to be brilliant in this role because I could move a mouse and talk at the same time. Yeah. There's a part of the role, and the role is in its purest sense, it's sales engineer. So I was a sales engineer, and that's the individual typically that supports a salesperson, typically in software sales or technology sales, that either gives the technical demonstration or maybe a technical presentation. Here's the part of the job that I didn't understand was the sales part. Like it actually meant being in sales. And so the other sort of, or another sort of twist in my career is after I made this decision. And like I said, I mean, I really believed I was going to love the job. There was a lot about sales that I didn't know I didn't know anything about. And so sort of the next hurdle for me was really understanding that rather than thinking of myself as a technical person, I really needed to understand that I was in sales. First and foremost, my job was in sales, and I needed to develop sales skills. And it took me, a little while to figure that out. But once I did, I became the number one sales engineer in my particular group. And that's not to brag, just to say that once I figured out those sales skills added to my technical acumen, I really catapulted my career.
Yeah. Chris, I have a question there because, I mean, I've worked with sales engineers over my career, and it can be really intimidating, the thing about, wow, a big piece of my job is sales. I want to be the engineer. Yeah. When you recognize that's a hurdle, I need to learn about sales. How did you feel about that hurdle?
Yeah. No, it's a good question. And to be fair, it was difficult. I, I literally had to come to peace with the fact that I was in sales. And I think so many of us have a perception, almost a misnomer, of what it means to be in sales or what it means to be a salesperson. So many of us think of the used car salesperson, right?
The plaid jacket.
Exactly. But both of us know Scott Cassidy. You know, I love Scott Cassidy. He's always saying, what's it going to take to put you in this cab? You know? So I had to come to peace with the fact that even though I'm the technical expert, and my job is really to get the technical win, that really my job is sales. But I did come to peace with that, particularly when you start to understand that sales, to sell is really to serve, and to sell is really to solve. And you change your perspective on sales. That really helped me come to peace with that. So, but by the way, once I came to peace with it, then I had to learn what it actually meant to be in sales. There are ways in which we need to communicate differently, right, in a pre-sales conversation than a post-sales conversation. So there were a lot of little lessons that had to be learned along the way.
Yeah. And that's all they are. They're just lessons, right? They're just, something new I need to learn, and how do I learn it?
Indeed. Indeed. And by the way, one of the things I've learned is that you keep learning the lessons over and over, and life continues to present those lessons to you, right? Until you learn them. And every time you think you've fully learned it, life gives you another reminder that there's another nuance.
That's right.
You haven't fully learned yet. So, yep.
And sometimes it takes a while too. I sometimes think about it this way, Chris. It's like the universe keeps knocking until I finally figure out, oh, there's something here I'm supposed to get
well
out of
said.
This.
Yeah.
You know?
That's very well said. When you say the universe keeps knocking. So, and going back to your initial question about the twists and turns, as I look back on my career, I recognize that each step along the way was, in fact, the universe sort of knocking and the universe saying, "There's another step, right? Or you're still not quite to where you're supposed to be." So, I said I was, I was an IT, I studied IT. I got to the point where I was a consultant, very well paid, not happy. Got into sales. Sort of, stubbed my toe in the first 6 or 9 months, sort of figure that out. And for about 5 years, I was in the field and I really just loved it. I mean, I just cherished that role. And of course, like so many people who succeed in a role, they're then put in a management position. So I was, I had the opportunity to take a leadership role, over a pre and post sales consulting team, sales engineering team. And what I very quickly discovered in that role was that the people that were working for me were making many of the same mistakes that I had made early in my career as a sales engineer. And again, they were experts in the technology. They were very knowledgeable, but they just didn't understand the sales side. Yeah. And at the time, this is about 2010, there weren't a lot of really, there was very little sales training for sales engineers. So I assembled and put together some training for my team, and that training then became sort of the standard training for the entire company. The CEO got wind of it, and in addition to my other roles, he had me going around, literally around the country and then the world, delivering this sales training to other sales engineers in the company. And it was at that point that I realized that my passion was ultimately to be a coach and a trainer and a workshop facilitator. But it took me a full on 10 more years to get to that point. Through various roles of, I was running a team. I was an account executive for a while, quote, carrying a bag. I got into sales enablement. I ran sales enablement for a company for a little while. I got into product marketing for a little while. And it was interesting. Every step was, I think, an attempt to land in that place where I felt fully, actualized in my career. But it wasn't until I finally fully sort of jumped off the ledge, as they say, and launched my own sales training business, that I finally got to the place where I knew I belonged. And that wasn't until this year. So it, you know, once even though, like I said, in 2010, I felt like, wow, this is really what I should be doing. It took me that long to get there.
Wow. Well, Chris, I think that goes to, you know, sometimes it takes a while for things to emerge.
It really does. Well, and I'm sure, Bobby, you've experienced this too. I mean, sometimes the environment's not right, right?
That's
right.
Sometimes
the timing's not right, whether it's family obligations, the ages of your children, other situations, right, that are sort of outside your control. And I think for a lot of people, it's easy to feel like, well, I can't, I really want to do X, but I can't do it now. So it's probably mm-hmm. never going to happen. And if there's anybody out there listening, you know, listening to your podcast, my message to you is if you have a dream, if you have something that's sort of burning inside of you and now it's not the right time, don't give up that dream. I mean, like I said, it took me a full on 10 years. And to be fair, I made a couple of steps in the direction that I thought would get me there. For example, at one point I invested in a business coaching franchise, thinking that was sort of the shortcut to get there. Because it was easy to just write, well, it wasn't easy, but I just wrote a big fat check, you know, to the tune of like $50,000 and spent another $20,000 or $30,000 in the process and realized that there's no shortcut, right? I just, yep. you know, there's no way you can't just buy yourself into, you know, a career, you know, position. But nonetheless, I didn't let go of that dream, and I finally found my way there. So
yeah, I love that message too, because sometimes it's just the dream's fine. It's just maybe the timing just isn't right for whatever
exactly.
reason, you know.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Chris, when we spoke about that the franchise that you invested in, I loved you said something like, you know, that could have been the end. But then you just
yes.
framed it as, hey, it was just an investment that it just didn't work. And a lot of investments don't work.
Exactly. Well, and how many of us put our money into the stock market or invest mm-hmm. in mutual funds that we have virtually no control over, right?
None.
We have very little. I mean, if you're investing in a mutual fund, unless you are good and really do your homework, which I do not, like you may not even know what companies you've actually invested in. And Lord knows that the stock market goes up and the stock market goes down. So you're exactly right. I placed a bet on myself, and I'm the first to admit that I jumped in more blind than I should have. But I just looked at it as a huge tuition check that I just paid, and I learned a valuable lesson. And thank goodness I have a spouse who gave me the benefit of the doubt and said, I still believe in you mm-hmm. and you have my support. And she didn't love the fact that we lost that money.
No.
But she was by my side and she said, I know you can do this. Like, let's just figure out a way.
Yeah.
And the way for me finally was that training that I had created back in 2010 for my team, over the years, it sort of evolved into a framework and a methodology. And then about a year ago, I published a book. I published The 6 Habits of Highly Effective Sales Engineers, you know, based on that framework. And incidentally, I had tried for years to publish the book. And it wasn't until I met a coach who his specialty was helping people publish books. And by the way, his thing was, if you do exactly what I'll tell you to do, your book will be published in 1 month and it'll be an Amazon bestseller.
Wow.
Now, I didn't necessarily believe him, but
that sounds too good to be true.
Right. But I really wanted to. I really wanted to. And so, and I say that obviously tongue in cheek, but I did invest in his program. And in fact, as it turns out, 2 months after the day I hired him, I published my book and it was in fact an Amazon bestseller. It made it to the Amazon bestseller rank. Number one bestseller on the day it was published. And that made all the difference in the world. And one of the messages there, if you haven't seen a recurring theme, you know, I said I was struggling in my career 15 years in and I found a coach.
Yep.
And that turned my life around. And then I was struggling to write a book and I found a coach. And 2 months later, I literally published a book. It was interesting. I was talking to somebody. I heard myself saying this story once, probably 5 or 6 months ago. And it occurred to me then, I was like, you know, I guess I'm a pretty big advocate for coaches at this point, because like the coaches in my life have really made a difference.
That's right. Well, and the other thing because I was noticing that theme, Chris, and the other thing I notice is that's also an investment. It's not an expense. It's an investment in yourself and in your career.
It really is. It really is. And I'm glad that you point that out. There's so many people that I talk to that I feel like they don't understand money.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything I could say to anybody, it's something I talk to my kids about a lot. Like money is a tool, right? It's a tool to help us achieve, you know, things for our families and for our friends and to leave the world a better place, you know, and to me, one of the best places you can invest is in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, look, I wrote a big check to this book coach, but it has literally changed my life.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine my life now. I literally cannot imagine my life right now not having published the book and being where I am. And had I not written that, you know, what would be a sizable check for many people, I wouldn't be here. So
yeah,
I think that's a really good, that's an important comment that you've made.
Well, and you know, the other thing too, Chris, that I was thinking about is, sometimes you make those investments and there's a very clear payoff, like with the book coach. And
yes.
Sometimes you make the, like, I think about, oh my goodness, my husband and I, we moved to Portland, Oregon in 2001, started a business. We had no business starting a business, but we're like, we're going to learn. And boy, did we learn. But one of the things we did, there was a conference and it was expensive, like, you know, several thousand dollars. And we debated on it and I'm like, do we have the money? And the answer was, we don't have the money, but we just felt like we need to go, because this is going to change us somehow. And it's funny because I can't point to exactly, I think it was just a mind shift and some mindsets that we learned.
Yeah.
But I do not regret a penny of that check, because it's like, it helped us to go farther down the path. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I do. And I, you know, some things you just can't put a dollar amount on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear myself saying that, and I recognize that there are a lot of people, there are legit financial challenges and problems, and I get that, and I appreciate that. And you know, I'm certainly not suggesting that we spend money that we don't have, kind of thing. But
right.
I could, you know, in like the example that you just gave, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, you probably will never, you would never have remembered the few thousand dollars that you saved, but now you'll never forget the things that you learned by going to that conference.
Right.
You know?
And it changes.
And to me, yeah. Yeah. And so I just think that's, it's such a powerful example, you know. There are just some things that it's hard to put a dollar value on.
Yeah. Well, even like with your career coach, I mean, that is, I mean, it ultimately it led to where you are now, which is terrific. But yeah. Just to think about, because I hear a lot of people say this, like, you know, I wasn't happy in my job. And then what's wrong with me that I'm not happy in my job? And that can become its own downward spiral. Just to be able to meet with someone and get that coaching where, you know, you found a way forward, you know? And I have to ask you too, can you, when we talked before, I think you said one of the things he told you is that there's a difference. It was about squirrels living in trees versus cats who can climb trees. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. I'm glad you asked. So yes, what was so powerful about his program is it literally gave me a new language, and he gave me a new way to think about my skills and my abilities. And what he said is, here's the thing, Chris, is that so many of us, we get into a profession because it's something we're good at or something we can do. And in my case, it was computer programming and database design. I was very good at the analytics side of that and the technical side of that. The problem is it just didn't mesh. The way I spent my days didn't mesh with what I'm most natural doing. I'm most natural speaking with people, engaging, problem solving, right? Having conversations like this, like that's my natural habitat, right? Whereas as a computer programmer, your quote natural habitat is to sit in a cube or an office with the door closed, right? Working by yourself in front of a computer, right? And so, and the best analogy he gave was, and you sort of said a moment ago, he said, here's the thing, Chris, consider cats. They can climb trees, right? So they can do the task, right? They have the skill. But squirrels live in them. And that's the difference between somebody who's truly in a career or a profession that is just their, quote, their natural habitat, right? It's what they would roll out of bed and do naturally, whether they had a job or not, kind of thing, right? As opposed to the cat in the tree, which is there are so many people that are rolling out of bed and going in and doing certain things because that's their job. They happen to be good at it, right? But it's not really like who they truly are. Does that resonate?
Yeah. And it makes me think too, Chris, so many people, they get on that path, you know, and especially when you're good at it and you have a lot of people telling you that you're good at it, it can be really hard to pull back and say, yeah, but it's not making me happy. Yeah. You know, have you, when I was in grad school, Marcus Buckingham came in and spoke to my class, and it was amazing. And he's big in one of the leaders in the whole strengths-based movement. Loved him. His stuff is amazing. And he talked about it, how when we're good at something, you know, for him, a strength is something that you're good at probably. And if you're not good at it, you want to work on it because you're so energized by it. And he said, but there are plenty of people who, you know, they'll say, oh, well, you're really good at X, but that doesn't mean it's a strength if it doesn't give you energy.
That's really good.
You know, so that for it to be a strength, it has to be something that gives you energy. And I think that's the piece that so many people, I think we miss that somehow.
And I've read something recently where, you know, where what you're good at collides with where your passion is. Like that's where sort of the magic happens.
Yeah.
It sounds similar to what you're saying with the strengths, right? Is where your skills are, but also you get you're energized by that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, years ago, believe it or not, because I'm not the most tech savvy person now, but there is a time when I used to do technical training. I wrote end user manuals and I was really good at it, but that doesn't mean I should be doing it, you know, or that I loved it. I mean, what I loved about it was I knew I was helping people. you know, that's what I liked about it. But as far as like sitting down and figuring out the program and, I could do it and I was pretty good. Doesn't mean it's my, my passion by any stretch of the imagination. So with now, Chris, I know that you have had, pandemic or no, a really good year. Do you kind of want to share us, like, you know, your book came out, you started your business, things are going well for you right now, aren't they?
Yeah. So it's interesting. And I mentioned this a few minutes ago that I officially launched my training business in, as it turns out, in March of 2020, which
perfect timing,
right? As we all know, right? Literally weeks before the pandemic. And it really has gone well for me so far. And I think there's a couple of reasons. First of all, when I first launched the business, I was in a full-on sprint, 60 miles an hour, from about 8 a.m. until 6 p.m., prospecting, reaching out to people I knew, prospecting people I didn't know. And then about, you know, 3 or 4 weeks into it, when the pandemic, you know, sort of initially hit, right, and everybody was sort of in a pandemic, I turned it up. And by the way, I was running pretty fast at that point already, but I turned it up to about 100 miles an hour from, you know, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. I mean,
wow.
I was just relentless on LinkedIn, on, you know, in a period of 3 months, I think I did like 6 or 7 webinars and half a dozen podcasts. And I just got myself out there. Now, granted, I published the book. And so, and you know, for anybody out there that's maybe thinking about publishing a book or doing something, you know, similar, you know, to what I've done, which is coaching, training, publishing a book is the best thing I've ever done, you know, in terms of outreach and marketing, because, one of the ways in which I reach out to people on LinkedIn, and I target people in a very specific niche. I target sales and leaders. But I just reach out and introduce myself and say, hey, you know, I published a book last year that I thought, you know, you or some of your folks might be interested in. And that, you know, that tends to be very well received. And it does give me sort of an instant level of credibility, whether it's deserved or not.
Right. But it's a book.
But it's a book. Exactly. So I'm the first to admit that I have that working in my favor, but I'm sincerely convinced, Bobby, that it's simply the fruits of the labor. I really think that I shouldn't be surprised that things are going okay because I was working as hard as I was working. And to me, it's just evidence that even during something as historically unusual as a pandemic, that the effort that you put in is going to equal the results that you get on the other side. So, that being said, and frankly, I feel incredibly fortunate, that there is still there's enough of a market out there. There's enough people, you know, organizations out there that are looking for help. And if I may, there's a number of people that I've developed relationships with who haven't spent any money with me yet, and it hasn't necessarily produced revenue, but they're relationships that are helping me become a better person, and they're helping me shape my business and my messaging. And there are also people that I believe at some point, when they do have a budget for training or when they do have a need for training or coaching, that I'm the person that they're going to look for. So even, you know, for anybody out there that's either in a sales role or maybe a coach or in training or anything of that nature, even if your outreach and your prospecting isn't generating revenue, I believe we can do a lot to build rapport, build relationships, build recognition in the marketplace, and that's going to pay dividends down line.
I completely agree. Right? I mean, it's the farming part of it.
Exactly. You know?
And Chris, I have to say, when you were talking, you're like, you said something like, I was really lucky that I had that in your corner when you were talking about having the book. And
yes.
As soon as you said that, I thought, okay, I agree with the sentiment. And it's not like you just had it. You created it.
Yeah.
I mean, no one handed that book to you and said, hey, and writing a book, it's hard. I've done it and it's hard.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I certainly appreciate that, Tom. And you're right. I need to probably pause and acknowledge that. Yeah. I did that, I guess. You know, again, the point is I don't want to make it. I mean, I think people might look at me and say, well, it's easier for you to do outreach because you have a book. And my response to that is, yes, it is. But that, like the book isn't the only way to be an author these days. Right?
That's right.
I mean, there's another gentleman that I was talking to who's sort of in a similar line of work to us. He doesn't have a book, but I said, start writing blogs. I mean, for crying out loud, anybody can write articles on LinkedIn.
That's right.
Start writing articles on LinkedIn, share them with everyone you know in your network. If it's good stuff, people are going to start reading it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many podcasts, you know, people who run podcasts like yourself, right, are looking for interesting and intelligent people to do podcasts, right?
Yep.
You really have to get, there's so many ways to get yourself out there. And I do think that's the difference. I really do think that that's the difference between being viewed as one of the things we like to talk about, being viewed as a trusted partner, right? Being viewed as an expert in the field versus a quote salesperson who's just looking to, you know, find someone to spend some money, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of opportunities there.
And there's so much opportunity with the writing to just add value, you know, regardless of if anything comes back. And when you said the thing about just start writing a blog, my book came out of, and this was back in 2010 when I published it, but it came out of a weekly newsletter that I used to do. And then finally one day I'd been doing the newsletter, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And I started looking back through all the things and I'm like, wow. There could be a book here because I started
that's
to
awesome.
Notice themes, but that's the thing. You just got to get it out of your head, you know? And the other thing that you're talking about there, Chris, and this is something I admire about you. You put yourself out there, right? You work hard, you put yourself out there, and you and I both know this. We've encountered it. It can be tough for people to do that, especially during a hard time. So what keeps you going, putting yourself out there continually?
Oh, I'm wishing we're on video and you can see my face as you're saying these words. I'm chuckling because I have to say it's easily the most, well, certainly one of the most difficult things of I think what we do. I don't know if, you know, what keeps me going. The ability to, I guess, put the fear and discomfort behind me and do it anyways, or just knowing that it's the right thing to do and in all sincerity, you know, hoping and believing that the message is helping somebody, you know, like
that's right.
If one of my videos or one of my posts or one of my blogs or, you know, articles helps even one person, then I find myself thinking, you know, it's worth it for that reason. But here's the truth is it's one of the least comfortable things that I do. I think I may have even mentioned this to you. There was when I early on or in one of the very early weeks after I had started the business, I downloaded, I think I paid about $50 for a social network calendar from one of the experts. And they, you know, they literally laid out the entire calendar and kind of said, you know, today post a story about one of your customers and today, you know, post a question for your audience. Right. And so it was a Saturday morning and the instruction for Saturday morning was post pictures of yourself, you know, in action,
right? If you're a coach, a picture of you coaching a class, or if you're a speaker, a picture. And so I thought to myself, well, I spent the $50 on this calendar and, you know, like I may as well, I don't want that $50 to go to waste. So this person is the expert. So I went through some old pictures and I found two pictures of myself speaking on stage, and I put them on LinkedIn, and I typed up a little thing that said something to the effect of, you know, what's your favorite part of being a sales engineer? My favorite part is having the opportunity to speak to an audience. Do you know I stared at that post for easily 20 minutes before I clicked post? It was the most uncomfortable thing for me to do, to put pictures of myself on LinkedIn. Bobby, do you know how many views that post has?
No, I'm so curious though, Chris.
Like over 5,000 views.
Are you serious?
I am totally serious. Like I had over 5,000 views of the post. I had over 100 like reactions of the post. I had dozens and dozens of comments, you know, people, you know, good for you, Chris. You're so good, blah, blah, blah. It's one, if not the most popular post I've ever put on LinkedIn, easily one of the most popular posts I've ever put on LinkedIn. And I was seconds away from deleting it and telling myself, this is silly. Yeah. And so that's why when you were asking, you mentioned the question about putting, you know, yourself out there. If there's anybody out there who's uncomfortable with it, I can assure you that most of us who seem to have somewhat of a presence out there are still uncomfortable with it, mm-hmm. but it's so worth it. And here's the reality. It encourages other people to find their courage as well.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, that's worth it. So anyway, that cool. your question sparked up an interesting story. So,
yeah. But Chris, I can totally relate to it. Cause sometimes you're getting ready to post something and you're like, this is so stupid. Or why am I doing
this?
You know? And it's funny too, cause I always think about, I have this thing about just start. So if there's something that you want to do, take an action, take a step, you know, just start. And yes. I was doing a monologue on it because I was thinking about what gets in the way of people just starting. And I think, you know, not to simplify it, but one of the things is that just wait voice inside of our head that says, this is silly, or who are you to do this, or you might fail. I mean, there's so many different voices that takes on. But that to me is that moment where, you know, where you were battling that with, okay, this is silly. So let me ask you this. What made you hit post?
Oh gosh. I wish I could tell you exactly what it was. I think it, at some point it's just a matter of, you know, to a certain degree, I think it's a matter of letting go. I think it's accepting that you can't control how people are going to perceive this. You can't control the haters and the dislikers.
That's right.
And either you're in or you're out, right?
Yeah.
Either you're doing it or you're not. And by the way, if it flops, it flops, and you figure it out and you go from there, you know? So I think that's it. Now that you've asked me and sort of encouraged me to think, you know, come up with an answer, I think that's what it is. I think it's letting go of what you can't control and just accepting that, look, this is the expert. I got advice from an expert who said, this is what you should do on a daily basis. So just follow the advice and do it and let the rest, you know, happen as it may.
Yep. And I love that piece of it, you know, the letting go. Just in the other piece I heard there was the, and I've heard this a lot from people in the podcast, like, are you in? Are you all in? Because you kind of can't do it halfway.
Yeah.
You know? So that was great. So thanks for humoring me on that. I'm always curious about those things though. And my husband's always giving me a hard time. He's like, you're so nosy. And I'm like, I don't think I'm nosy. I think I'm curious. And I like the framing of that so much better.
Yeah.
It's so much nicer sounding. So,
well, and to be honest, it was, you know, I think some of the best questions are questions that really help others come up with some answers that they're not even sure they've really discovered for themselves. Right. And that was certainly one of those questions. So it was good.
Yeah. Well, and I think that part of it is like some of those things that's just innate with who we are. So it makes us, sometimes it takes a question to make a stop and pause and reflect and say, well, I don't know. But if you want me to come up with an answer, I'll do my best.
Yeah, exactly.
So Chris, this has been fabulous. And where can people learn more about you or your book, you know, what you're doing?
Yeah, of course. I'd be happy to share. So the website is demodoctor.com. And again, my target market is technology sales professionals, sales engineers. The book is The 6 Habits of Highly Effective Sales Engineers. It's available on Amazon. And as you all know, I'm also affiliated with Aslan Training and Development. So I'm a certified Aslan instructor, and I'm doing a lot of work with them as well. So, and I try to be all over LinkedIn. So if anybody, although Chris White is a pretty, common name, I could probably fill up a podcast sharing mistaken identity stories. But people can find me on LinkedIn as well. So
very cool. And so final question for you, thinking back to when you were kind of mid-career and the, you know, not sure maybe what to do or something like that, or what was next, but just having that inkling that maybe what I'm doing isn't it, you know, in air quotes, what advice would you have for a person who's in those same shoes now?
I think my advice is probably not going to come by surprise to anybody who's listening to this. My first would be to get some advice, get some help, whether that's from a coach or from someone that you trust, maybe a mentor, maybe a boss that you've worked with, or somebody that you've worked with that you've trust, is to seek some advice and get their opinion. Number one. Number two, don't think there's something wrong with you. If you're not satisfied, or if you feel like there's something in there, chances are that feeling is right. And chances are there is something. And I guess the third thing is, and I mentioned this earlier, don't ever let go of that dream, of that feeling. I believe that those are put there by a higher purpose and a higher power, and that we need to really, you know, strive to kind of find and pursue that calling and that passion. So that's my advice.
Nice. And I like kind of the recap, because we covered so much great stuff. And I think those are three really great steps. And I just want to thank you again, Chris. I know how busy you are, and this has just been, it's been very valuable. So I appreciate your time.
Well, you're quite welcome, Bobby. And thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure for me as well. And Lord knows, my wife tells me all the time, like, your stories get long and and drawn out sometimes. So no. I appreciate your patience with some of my stories. So, but Lord knows, I'd love to tell them.
No, the stories were great, Chris. So thank you. I hope that you enjoyed hearing about Chris's journey. Here are my takeaways. Number one, detours are a normal part of the journey. We don't have to resist them, and we don't need to judge them. They just are. Number two, sometimes we work hard and we achieve the success that we thought we wanted, but then we discover that it's not making us happy after all. That doesn't mean that we made a mistake. It simply means that the journey is still unfolding. Number three, and I've experienced this one for myself, life has a way of presenting lessons that we need to learn along the way. And sometimes those lessons are disguised as obstacles. Number four, It takes a while for our journey to fully unfold. Instead of thinking, what's the next perfect step? We may need to reframe that to, what is the next step that is aligned with who I am and what my strengths and values are, and that will move me in the direction that I want to go? Number 5, even if now isn't the right time for your dream, it doesn't mean that the dream is wrong. It may just be that the timing is wrong. Number 6, the best investment that you can make is the investment that you make in yourself. Number 7, the effort you put in affects the results that you get out. Number 8, sometimes you just have to put aside the fear and the discomfort and worrying about what other people might think and just have the courage to put yourself out there. Number 9, to make that bold step, you have to learn how to manage what I like to call the just wait voice. That's the voice inside of us that comes with all sorts of reasons to just wait. Or what if you fail? Or what if you get rejected? If you want to learn more about the just wait voice, you can check out episode number 4 titled Just Start. Here's what I really hate about the just wait voice. It can sometimes keep us from living our fully authentic life. So it's important that we learn how to silence it. And I give more ideas in that episode, episode 4, titled Just Start. Again, these were just some of my takeaways. I hope that you found some wisdom that you can take and apply to your own journey. If you found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing as well as leaving us a 5-star review below. It's the best way for us to reach more people and spread the message. Also, if you know someone who could benefit from the podcast and the message that we're spreading, please consider telling them about it. This has been the Unyielded Podcast, and I believe that thriving, it's not a destination. It is a process, an evolution, where we are continuing to expand who we are, and we're allowing our stories to emerge and unfold. I truly believe this is how we flourish and how we can direct our energy into a place of positive influence. My life's work is to change the world for the better, one life at a time. I hope that you help me do that by sharing the work.